The story of Ellis Island in New York Harbor is well known. It was the entry point to the United States for millions of immigrants. Much less well known is the story of Angel Island in San Francisco Bay. It, too, played a role in immigration, though not nearly the generally sunny role Ellis Island played in so many lives. The immigration station on Angel Island closed years ago and fell into disrepair. Now it has been spruced up for visitors to learn of the history of American immigration and exclusion. And the California state budget, passed recently, dedicated a chunk of money to finish the sprucing up. Grant Dinn is with the Angel Island Immigration Station Foundation, AIISF, where he's the Community Relations Director and our guest on The Exchange. Grant, welcome.
Thank you, Jeff.
Good to have you here today.
Happy to be here.
Give us a quick history lesson. How did Angel Island function in the immigration system?
Well, for 30 years, between 1910 and 1940, it was the point at which a lot of immigrants from across the Pacific were interviewed. Many of them were questioned on their ship, and if their papers were in order, were generally sent on their way in San Francisco. But for a lot of them, especially those from Asia, they had to go through a whole series of questioning because of laws like the Chinese Exclusion Act, which kept out all Chinese who were laborers and only allowed those who were merchants, students, diplomats, educators, and the like. Others who came through were sons and daughters of those who were already here or claimed they were already here. If they were born here, their parents would be citizens.
So was Angel Island a bit more of a place of sorrow, perhaps, than Ellis Island ever was?
Yes. For many of those who came through, they were questioned to verify that they were actually the sons and daughters of who they said they were. And the government developed a very extensive set of questioning. For example, they would say, and I ask your listeners to think if they know these answers for their own house, who lives in the third house of the fourth row of your community? How many windows are in your house? Where in your house is the rice bin kept? Things like that. They would ask these questions of the alleged child, and the alleged father, usually the father. If their answers did not match, they would think that they were really not their son or daughter and often schedule them for deportation. And so people would appeal their cases, and they'd hire local attorneys from San Francisco. And during the time that their cases were in appeal, they would just wait and have not much to do. And a lot of them would carve poems into the walls of the building, and that's where the stories have become known, and that's why the buildings were saved, because there are hundreds of poems all over the walls, tales of sorrow and frustration and anger at their own government for being weak so they couldn't stay in this country, and so on. And a lot of them have been, pretty much all of them have been translated and published.
So I want to understand, there was a detention center of sorts at Angel Island?
Yeah, in many ways it was, because people would come through and they would be kept. Usually people would stay only maybe a few days or up to a week or two, but if their cases were questioned, they would stay for as long as a few months and even as long as a couple years for some men and women that we've documented.
So by 1940, when the operation shut down, World War II was already going. Was that a factor in its closing?
Well, actually, there was a fire that electrical fire that burned down the administration building in 1940, and so the building was actually used to house. Well, actually, not the building that burned down, of course, but the barracks building were used to house both prisoners of war from Japan and Germany, but also so-called enemy aliens. They were immigrants from Japan, Italy, and Germany who were rounded up. And we've documented a lot of the Japanese immigrants who were taken away by the FBI right after Pearl Harbor. And a lot of them were just regular people. They're journalists, ministers, and community leaders that the FBI had dossiers on. And so once the war started, they rounded them up, including 600 from Hawaii and 100 from the U.S. mainland up and down the West Coast. And so they were detained briefly and then sent off to other camps by the Department of Justice. And so after the war, though, the buildings were pretty much abandoned, and immigration processing was moved to San Francisco in 1940.
All right, so it is a true island. This is not one of those places that has a bridge to it. You can't drive to Angel Island. And,
correct.
So did the place sit vacant for, I don't know, the next 50, 60 years?
Oh, yeah. After World War II, it was pretty much abandoned. And it wasn't until 1970 when there was a park ranger named Alexander Weiss, who himself was a refugee from Nazi Germany. He came when he was a small child and later became a freedom rider in the South. So he was always involved in very progressive politics. And he heard that there were some writings on the wall in the immigration station's building in the barracks. And so he started looking around and noticed all these Chinese characters, and actually other languages are there too, Russian and Japanese and even Urdu, a South Asian language. And so he happened to be a student at San Francisco State University after the ethnic studies strike resulted in ethnic studies. So he talked to some of his professors, or professors he knew, and said, hey, do you know about this place? And most of them said, no, what's going on? And it turns out some of them, once they did some questioning, found out their own parents had been there. And so they started documenting it and said, well, if they tear this building down, because it was, the master plan said the site was, I think, either a campsite or a picnic area, if they tear it down, we have to document it. And then they said, no, we can't let them tear it down at all. And so they got state support to preserve the building, and eventually they realized it cost a lot more money than just shoring up the buildings. And so we've been able to get about $40 million in state and federal funding to shore up the building, renovate it, make it a place where people could come and learn. And then, as you mentioned in the opening, we're finishing up the hospital building, which is on site, and turning that into a Pacific Coast Immigration Center, talking about West Coast immigration, not just during the Angel Island time of 1910 to 1940, but also before, during, and after, and not just San Francisco, but up and down the West Coast, so people can learn as much about West Coast immigration as they would Ellis Island, which tells mostly the story of East Coast immigration.
A lot of immigration stories to be learned, certainly, at Angel Island, where Grant Dinn is the Community Relations Director for the Angel Island Immigration Station Foundation. Angel Island, of course, off San Francisco. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange as we talk about the stories that are being preserved there and what happened in the past. 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. So the writing was there for a long time,
yeah.
And obviously it had been noticed by other people. Was it just considered graffiti or junk or something?
I think that's what people considered. They didn't realize the historic impact or understand why it was there. And if it weren't for Alexander Weiss, the building would have been torn down long ago. And, scholars have looked at the poems and said they were, many of them are in a classically oriented style, and they've got all kinds of literary references, and people have copied them all down. We were lucky because there were two detainees who were in the immigration station for so long that they wrote down all the poems that they could find back then in the 20s and 30s, I believe, and they were made available to researchers like Judy Young and him, Mark Lai, and Jenny Lim, and they published all these poems in a couple books, and because not all the poems are easily read. There's one poem in particular that somehow escaped the ravages of time, because the government would generally paint over naturally, right? They said, they're graffiti. We don't want them around. So they would cover them up with putty and paint over them. And what turns out is that over time, the putty would shrink and it kind of exposed the poems. So they were actually preserving the poetry for future generations and not realizing that.
Almost like literary fossils in a sense.
Yes, yes. It's like some headlines I've seen, if the walls could talk, and they definitely talk in these cases.
Wow. So when you mentioned literary references, so were some of these just recitations of other people's poems? Was some of it original, though?
I think they were all original, but they would make references to, like, things that happened 300 or 400 years ago, or Chinese legends. And you know, if I had made, I would snap Zhu's whip, which is some sort of military leader, I believe, who fought off, you know, invaders. You know, if I had that kind of power, I could do that. And so they were all pretty much originals. And scholars have some discussions on how they were created. Maybe there was a council to decide which ones were worthy enough to be carved, and then someone would write them by ink, and then they would be carved and by perhaps a different person, and whoever had the best handwriting or calligraphy, of course, would get to write them on the wall. And it's just amazing. That's an amazing place when you walk through.
I have a hard time believing detainees were allowed to have knives.
I know.
What did they use, bed springs or something?
We think they look like knives. I mean, they weren't searched as much as the prisoners were who came there later, but I guess they figured they weren't going to harm anybody. But yeah, it is surprising that they had carving implements with them.
Truly.
Maybe they were passed on from detainee to detainee.
We're talking about Angel Island in San Francisco Bay and its role in immigration and exclusion of people coming primarily from Asia into the United States. 1910 to 1940, it was opened. It is now being preserved through the help of the Angel Island Immigration Station Foundation, for which Grant Dinn is the Community Relations Director. You can join us on the exchange as we continue the discussion. 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. Alexander Weiss, was he, what, a day, a month, a year ahead of bulldozers or something?
It was a pretty short time. I think the master plan did call for them to be torn down, so I'm not sure how close they were behind. But there was an activist named Paul Chow who was very much out there. He would tell stories where he would chain himself to the building. So I don't know how close it was to actual destruction, but it was pretty close. And in Paul's eyes, it was very close. So it was really important to somehow get the community support. And so there was a state senator down here, John Foran, who was able to get a bill through the state legislature back in the mid-1970s to preserve it. And so we were very lucky that the timing worked out the way it did. There was a scene in Robert Redford's The Candidate where there's a fire going on in Malibu, and one of the employee cottages on the site, designed by Julia Morgan, who designed Hearst Castle, was used as was burned down to in a scene from the movie, and the candidates driving around Malibu area, which is really Angel Island, and we were back then they were concerned. Well, that was burned down for a movie. What could the rest of the building be? What could the rest of the site be used for? You know, it could be destroyed in another movie or something.
Sure.
So there was a definite urgency to get things done back in the 1970s.
So given that this was a federal facility, and I don't know if the federal government still owns the land, I mean, did you get much help from the federal government in setting up the funding for the foundation and doing the preservation?
Yeah, the federal government allocated quite a bit of funds for this, as well as a state bond measure. And so the government sources were the most important on it. It's now a National Historic Landmark, and the state parks run it, but I'm not sure exactly how the oversight is, but if the state park were ever to have to close, then they would revert to the federal government. When they gave the land to the state, that was a provision that it had to be open to the public, the whole island. It's also been used as a military base during World War II, and even the Civil War. Elsewhere on the island, there are remnants of the Civil War buildings where the Union was worried the Confederates would sail through San Francisco Bay on their way to take over the gold from Sacramento area.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So tell us about the Immigrant Voices Project that is part of the picture of the interpretation of what happened at Angel Island.
Sure. On our website, which is AIISF.org, we have over 200 stories of immigrants to the West Coast, and about two-thirds of them are Angel Island stories. And you can go in and search by, let's say you want to just find Angel Island stories and you want to find Chinese immigrants, you can search that way. We've got all these filters, and they tell a lot of interesting stories of people who had come through the island. Most of them have passed, unfortunately, because it was closed, 76 years ago. So those who are still left and able to tell their stories are, they're not too many. And so we have a lot of really interesting stories about what it was like as a child, where they came through, or as a young adult. And recently, or last year, we interviewed a 99-year-old man who was held in the hospital building his entire time on the island. And he was a young boy, and he said, well, the food was pretty good. So it was better than what they had in the barracks themselves, where things were tough. And he had a chance to play outside and things like that, which was probably a longer period he could play than the other people who were detained. When children would come, they generally would get to stay with their mothers, and the mothers had a different site over on the second floor of the administration building. But those who were 12, generally about 12 or older, or showed signs of going through puberty, were sent over to stay in the men's dorm by themselves. And you imagine what it would be like as a 12-year-old staying in this room where there are all these, many other men in these three high bunks. There were generally twice as many people in some of the rooms as they were considered healthy by the health department.
All right, we have a quick call here, Craig and Mount Shasta. We got about 30 seconds for you. Welcome to the exchange. Go ahead,
Super Duper. I just wanted to say hello and acknowledge the fact that I'm a fifth-generation native San Franciscan of Irish descent. But when I attended high school in Larkspur, California, at Redwood, we had an instructor by the name of Russell Hill, who included translations of poetry from the walls of Angel Island as part of our curriculum.
That's fantastic.
Okay, and have you heard many other, thanks to that, Craig, have you heard many other stories like that, Grant?
Yeah, a lot of teachers are using the poetry as part of their teachings.
All right, Angel Island preserved for future iterations to understand what happened there when it was an immigration station. You can take a look at more information at AIISF.org, the Angel Island Immigration Station Foundation, where Grant Dinn is the Community Relations Director. Thanks so much for joining us today, Grant.
Thanks a lot for having me.
All right, take care.